Okay, well, I'll mention this again later on, but just to encourage you to come back this evening, 5 o'clock, we'll be showing this movie called What If? What if God gave you a second chance? 5 o'clock this evening, popcorn will be served, I understand. Bring your favorite microwave popcorn, okay? And then it will be served, okay? So that's the plan. Appreciate Brian's efforts to plan that and put that together. And so come and enjoy that. Okay, we're in a part of our study on getting to know God the Father through the Old Testament. We're focusing on a part called Knowing God Through Returning to His Love. And last week, as we began this part of our study, we were talking about the knowledge of God gained through redemption. And we were focusing on the idea of the Israelite people getting to know God as a Savior, knowing God as a husband, and knowing God as a father. And all of this, of course, we're looking at the story of Hosea in the ministry of Hosea, and one of the things that we had talked about with that is that one of the major differences with the prophet Hosea versus other prophets is that oftentimes God would have the prophet do something that was a little bit out of the ordinary in order to bring a message to the Israelite people. But the situation with Hosea is more that Hosea's life is actually the message to the people. Okay, so God is giving the Israelite people a message, but He's giving that through the actual events of Hosea's life, calling upon Hosea to go and take for himself a wife of whoredom, the Bible says. In other words, an unfaithful wife. And he would have children of unfaithfulness. In other words, that this wife would be unfaithful to him and would bear children from other men and so forth. And all of this has to do with the relationship that God had with Israel, and through Hosea's life, God trying to call the Israelite people back to him in relationship. This morning, as this part of our study, as we continue with this study in Hosea, is looking at the knowledge of God lost through rebellion. Okay, so let's take a look at a couple of different aspects of this. First of all, we look at this idea of the rebellion and the knowledge that the Israelite people had of God, and certainly we've seen through our study thus far, as we've looked at a lot of different aspects, I think it would be reasonable to expect that they, as a nation of people, would know God, right? You see, God has certainly demonstrated Himself to them time and time and time again over the centuries. But we still find them in the days of Hosea at a point where they are forgetting about their relationship with God, and they have been unfaithful. And so what we want to look at in this section is, what are the reasons that contribute to this lack of knowledge of God on their part? So what are the things that are happening, amongst the Israelite people that are taking away this knowledge, so to speak? When we talk about knowledge of God here, understand, we're not talking about the idea that they didn't know who Jehovah was and that they had completely forgot about God, Jehovah God at all. But it's more or less speaks of the idea of the relationship with God and the trust in God and so forth. And so what are the things that are causing them to really get to the point where, concerning their relationship with God, they've kind of set it aside and they have, in that sense, forgotten about God and so forth? There are three major things that we want to talk about concerning, or the reasons or things that have contributed to their lack of knowledge or their failure to remember their relationship with God. The first one is a failure to acknowledge God's gifts. Okay? A failure to acknowledge God's gifts. What we see through the prophet Hosea is the result of the idolatrous seductions of the false gods that are there amongst the people in the land that they're living in. Okay, the people have been seduced by the other people of the region in terms of giving their alliance and their love and so forth to the false gods of the land in the land that they are living in. And so, like adulteresses, what's happened is that they refuse to acknowledge God's gifts. And what they have done is attributed those gifts that they have received from Jehovah, they have attributed those gifts to the gods of the Canaanites. So they have forgotten, or it's a failure to acknowledge not only the gifts that they received, but where those gifts have come from. Hosea basically attacks the very foundation of Canaanite worship of the Baals and the Ashtaroths. If you go back and you look at what the worship was really all about, the Canaanite worship of these gods, and when we talk about Baal, there were actually a lot of different Baal gods, okay? It wasn't just one in particular, but that's why oftentimes they're referred to as the Baals, okay? Because different communities had different gods that they referred to as Baal and so forth. But the part of the issue with these gods really has to do with the concept of a relationship between the gods. There was a particular sexual prowess of the two gods of fertility. In other words, from the Canaanite perspective, they looked upon Baal and Asherah as they were the gods of fertility. They were the gods that were responsible for meteorological events such as the rain and the clouds and fertility of the ground and fertility of the animals, fertility of the women. All of those things had to do with these two gods, you see. And so they looked upon those gods, and their fertility was to guarantee and to provide what was needed by the people from the land and so forth. So in other words, they were responsible for the fertility of the soil to make the crops grow, for the fertility of the animals to make the flocks grow and so forth. And they were the ones responsible for sending the rain, and all of those kinds of things had to do with these gods. They, the worship of these gods involved sexual practices with temple prostitutes and so forth, who were believed to really foster the fertility of these two gods. So the idea is, okay, we have temple prostitutes that are aligned to these gods, and if the people, they engage in sexual acts with these temple prostitutes, then what that's supposed to do is to enhance the fertility abilities of Baal and Asherah, because they were a couple. They were husband and wife, you see. Yeah. Well, the statues represented the gods. Okay? The statues represented the gods. So does that I know from a, you know, religious sense it doesn't make sense at all, but you understand, you know, how this thing is taking place and what their mindset really is. The Canaanite myth was the marriage of the gods that really sustained their agricultural and their other needs. So in other words, as long as these gods, Baal and Asherah, were happy, then they would provide what the people needed in terms of being able to take care of themselves. You See? So we need to do what is necessary to make them happy. But it all had to do with their provisions. You see, that they were able to raise their crops because the gods provided the proper amounts of rain and sunlight and so on and so forth. The Israelites then found themselves going after those gods, thinking that it was they who sustained them. Okay? They had been kind of sucked into the cultures and the religious practices of the Canaanites, you say, and were involved in doing the very same things that the Canaanites were doing concerning these gods because they had lost sight of where their real blessings were coming from. And so what was happening is that the Israelites were then attributing the blessings that they were receiving from God, they were attributing those blessings to Baal and Asherah. Okay. One way to kind of understand this a little bit better, and especially understand it from Jehovah's perspective, say, is that Yahweh too had a wife. And his wife was not one of mythology, but his wife was Israel. See, as we've seen in our previous studies, that's how God looked upon the Israelite people. The relationship that Yahweh intended with his people of Israel was to be a bond between him and Israel that would involve the love and the devotion and so forth that is just as strong as a human marriage bond was intended to be. Does that make sense? Okay? So what you have basically going on is that the Canaanites, their worship was this concept of these gods who were husband and wife type gods, and their worship involved doing things that pleased these gods so that those gods would give their blessings to the Canaanite people. But they were a husband and wife type of god. The Israelites got absorbed into that and were doing the very same things, and God was, as we saw in our study previously on in our worship time, God is what kind of a God when it comes to idolatry? He's a jealous God. Why? Because his wife is being unfaithful to him. Okay? Thus, the whole story of Hosea and the message that Hosea is to bring. God viewed their unfaithfulness as adultery because they were looking to another to provide what he had promised to provide. Okay. Look over in Hosea chapter 2. Let me get somebody to read for us verses 5 through 8. Hosea 2, 5 through 8. Okay, you see through the prophet Hosea what God is telling the Israelite people. His wife, what did she do? She was running after her other lovers. You see, and it's not enough that they just were going over there and worshiping these other lovers and involved, but what was it that they were really doing that made it even worse? What is she doing when she's going to her other lovers? Yeah. She's looking for them to provide for her needs. You see? Verse 5 here, I will go after my lovers who give me my bread and my water, my wool and my flax, my oil and my drink. My other lovers give me all these things. They provide these things for me. And God, through Hosea, is saying, she doesn't even realize. Israel doesn't even realize that it's me who gives her all these things. And not only that, look what he says in the last part of verse 8. I give her all of these things, and what does she do with them? She takes and gives it to Baal. You see? So how thorough is her unfaithfulness? Yeah. Yeah. You see, they failed to acknowledge where the gifts really, truly came from. They're looking at those gifts as coming from the Baals, when in fact they had come from God Himself. The accusation that God makes against Israel is very, very clear. That they had gone over or after their lovers, and they had done this both literally and figuratively. Okay? In not only worshiping these gods, but also involving themselves in the sexual practices that were associated with these gods. Okay? So, in other words, they weren't just, you know, didn't just have the idols set up, you know, and they would bow down and worship these idols. They were participating in the immoral sexual practices, the prostitution and so forth, of the worship of these gods. So they were fully involved in their adultery with these gods. And they did that to ensure the agricultural fertility and the sufficiency of the land and the provision that they needed. That's why they were doing these things. See? Make sure that they would be prosperous. Okay? And they were giving credit to the false gods of the Canaanites. Verse 8, the phrase there, she has not done what? Acknowledged. She has not acknowledged. Shows their complete ingratitude, and that really leads to the losing the knowledge of God or forgetting Him. See? When you fail to acknowledge where the blessings actually come from, see, what the real source of those blessings really come from, then that leads to the whole concept of just forgetting about Him all the more. So, though they knew about Jehovah God, they had this knowledge somewhere in the back of their head, so to speak, about Jehovah God, they were mostly focused on the gods of the Canaanites and relying on them for their sustenance. Because they had forgotten where their blessings come from. When we ourselves attribute our blessings to other causes, then we ourselves are in danger of forgetting the Lord. Okay? Now, I want, if you would, somebody to turn to Deuteronomy chapter 8 and read for us verses 17 and 18. And while we're doing that, I want you to think about what are some of the other causes oftentimes that we attribute our blessings to. Deuteronomy 8, verses 17 and 18. Has anybody ever met a so-called self-made man? There are those who claim to be a self-made man, but nobody is a self-made man because if I understand that passage correctly, everything that anyone gets comes from God. So there is no such thing as a self-made man, and that's what he's talking about. The person that said that goes, I have done this through my power. I've gained these things. I've acquired these things. You say, right? Did this on my own through my power. I have achieved these things or acquired these things or done this. Well, I think that probably most of us, you know, we look at it and we go, oh, come on, we know that, Russ. I would never do anything like that. I know that all these blessings come from God, but how many times have you ever said, man, I was lucky? Okay. Yeah, you see, Are we attributing the blessings that God gave us to something else rather than God, and we're attributing it to luck? Okay. Yeah, I was getting ready to talk about that. You know, Rick's a great example of that. When the doctor came in and gave him was talking about the situation of his cancer and so forth, said, you know, or the blood clot, rather, you're lucky. And he said, no, I'm not lucky. I'm blessed. Okay? And that's how it should be. You see, that we recognize where those blessings come from. And luck doesn't have anything to do with it. You see? But when we attribute the blessings that we get from God to something or someone else, whether it be ourselves or, you know, some other entity, be it, you know, the God of luck, you see, then are we not doing the same thing that the Israelites were doing then? You see? A failure to acknowledge where the gifts come from. That was one of their big problems. Okay? The second big problem that they had was it was a failure to walk in God's ways. Okay? So not only did they fail to remember or acknowledge where their blessings came from, but they failed to do what God told them to do. And what happens is, what we find is the Lord, through Hosea, and I like the language that he uses here, he brings an indictment against them. Okay? Look over in Hosea 4, verses 1 through 3, and let's take a look at what he says here concerning this indictment. Okay? Who's got that? Hosea 4, 1 through 3. okay? I bring this charge, or some translations uses the word indictment. Now, what is an indictment? In our modern language, in our legal system today, what does that term mean? Or to bring charges against someone, what does it mean? Right? Well, it actually is more than an accusation. What an indictment says legally is there is enough evidence to charge you with a crime. Okay? You see? There is enough evidence there. So this isn't just, well, we feel like that's what you did. We suspected you did something. There is evidence, there is proof enough that we feel like that we can convict you of this crime. And so God here is saying, I'm bringing this indictment against you. Here's the evidence. And notice that what he does here is he puts three things against six things here, doesn't he? In a sense, kind of, if you think about it on the scales, on some balancing scales, you see, and we think of that concept, the scales, what do they represent to us a lot of times? The scales of justice. Okay? And so God puts these items that he lists on the scales of justice, so to speak. Okay? On the one side, there are three things that he says they are lacking. What are they? Okay? Faithfulness, loyalty, or in some translations use the word love, and knowledge of God. Those three things are on one side of the scale. He says, they're lacking over here. Then on the other side, he's got six things that he says, you've got these things. What are they? Yeah. And bloodshed. So, does he have enough evidence to convict? You see, the scales of justice are out of balance here. Ryan? Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. And that's, you know, as we look at this, that since the people had lost all effective knowledge of God, there's a corresponding loss of essential qualities of a strong society. That's basically what this is showing. When you take God out of the equation and you lose the knowledge of Him, what's going to be the result? These kinds of things, you see. That's what he's saying. And you, Brian, you're exactly right. Is that not what's happening in our society today? See, the very same thing is happening. The godly characteristics are replaced with moral degradation of the society. And that's what's happening in our own society today. No knowledge of God or a lack of knowledge of God leads to no restraints on evil. Okay? No restraints on evil. And that's the way that there are a lot of folks in America today who want it to be. And that's why we're seeing more and more and more persecution of Christians, because there are those who don't want religion in society, because they want to do whatever it is they want to do. Okay? And that's where our society is headed. Okay? Let me get somebody to go over to Romans chapter 1 and read for us verses 18 through 32. It's a lengthy passage, but I think we need to take a look at this. Romans chapter 1, 18 through 32. And I guess we don't necessarily have to have the same person read the whole thing. Let's see, we can break this down a little bit. I get somebody to read, let's say, from 18 to verse 23. And then, who wants to read that? Pat, okay. And then let me get somebody to read verses 24 through 27. Okay, Judy. And then somebody else to read verses 28 through 32. Who wants to do that? Lynette. Okay, go ahead. I talked about this a couple of weeks ago, or last week it was, I believe, in our worship on Sunday morning study. The psalmist in Psalm 106 takes us back to Mount Sinai when the Israelites and Moses was on the mountain receiving the law, and what the Israelites were doing while he was getting the law from God. The psalmist writes, Psalm 106, verse 19. Something to tell. They made a calf in Horeb and worshipped a metal image. They exchanged the glory of God for the image of an ox that eats grass. They forgot God, their Savior, who had done great things in Egypt. Wondrous works in the land of Ham and awesome deeds by the Red Sea. What is it that Paul says here? If you go back over to verse 23, they exchanged the glory of the immortal God for images resembling mortal man and birds and animals and creeping things. Okay. What is the result of that as he goes on through this? What are the things that he's talking about? This total degradation of society. Okay. And of course, that's also the thing we've been talking about in our worship study, talking about the gods at war. You see, idol worship. When you go chasing after other gods, what do? You forget what the true God has done. And when you forget about the blessings that He has given, then you stop following his laws. When you stop following his laws, then there's nothing that bars evil from coming into the society. The third part of this really addresses overall how did that situation come about to begin with? How did they get to that point? You see, where they had failed to acknowledge the gifts of God and they were failing to keep his laws, it comes from the third aspect of this is a failure to teach God's laws. You see? And that's another part of what Hosea tells the people. Though everyone, then and now, everyone in Hosea's day, they all shared a particular culpability or guilt, you see. Hosea points his finger at those who are responsible for preventing the lack of knowledge to begin with. And who were those people? It was the priests. The priests were the ones who were responsible for teaching the people the ways of God. And they had failed in their obligation and their duty to do so. Brian? And that's exactly what's going on. Turn over to Hosea 4, verses 4 through 6. Let me get somebody to read that for us. And then let me get somebody else to go over to Leviticus 10, verses 10 and 11. Who's going to go there? Do I have a volunteer? Okay, Lynette, you go to Leviticus 10, verses 10 and 11. Who's got Hosea 4, 4 through 6? Who's got that? Peggy, you got it? Okay, hold on just a second here. Let me get somebody else to go over to Malachi. Malachi 2, verses 6 through 9. Who's going to read that one for us? Okay, Monique. And then I need one other person to go to James chapter 3 and verse 1. Okay, Lynette. All right. I hope you all remember who I just called on because I don't, okay? All right, Hosea 4, 4 through 6. Who's doing that one? Peggy, you got that? Okay. So the priests are given this responsibility, aren't they? And Hosea is calling them to account. He's pointing a finger at them. You haven't done what you need to do. Leviticus chapter 10. Lynette? Okay. What does this passage in Leviticus have to do with? It's part of the ordination of the priests. The instructions that were given to them when the priesthood was put together. This is what you are responsible for. And what is it? To teach the people. They were responsible for that. And they had abdicated that responsibility, and so God is calling them to account. Malachi speaks of the same problem that the Israelites had fallen into. But now, keep in mind, in Malachi's time, what's taking place? What's the situation by the time Malachi comes along that's different from where they are here? With Malachi, Malachi is preaching to people who have returned from captivity. So even after being in captivity, they still haven't learned their lesson. Who's got the passage in Malachi? Okay, Monique. Quickly they forgot. Okay. Same problem. Those who were tasked with the responsibility of teaching, they did not live up to that responsibility, and the people stumbled because of their failure to teach. You see, what we have to understand is there's nothing in the Bible that excuses individuals from their responsibility of knowing the Lord. Okay, everybody agree with that? We're all responsible individually for that. But there is a higher degree of responsibility that is placed upon those who are called to teach. Okay? To make sure that what is being taught is according to God's Word. Who's got the passage in James 3? Okay, Lynette, read that for us, please. Don't be so quick. Why? Because you're going to be held responsible. You're going to be held responsible for that. You see, the absence of good teaching and the danger of false teaching, Brian, both provide the avenue for evil in the lives of God's people. When we do not stand up individually and, you know, corporately, when our teachers fail to teach responsibly, then it opens up the avenue for what we have going on in our society today. Many of the issues that we have going on, and I've said this many times before, we are a nation that poll after poll after poll after poll, years and years and years now, has shown that typically somewhere around 78 to 82% of Americans claim to believe in God. Why do we have all the problems that we do in America if some 80% of people believe in God? Because of this very same reason. Their belief has been tainted. Okay, by what they have been taught and their failure to remember where their blessings have come from and their failure to keep God's law. When we allow other things to come in and replace what God's law is, then we open the door for anything and everything. And so, yeah, you know, we see the bumper stickers and the signs, the billboards that say what? Coexist with all the different religious symbols on it. That says what, Brian? We're just supposed to be tolerant of everybody else. But Jesus says, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except by me. You see? But people in the religious realm, in Christianity, let's not even talk about Judaism, let's talk about, you know, the Muslims or any of those other religions. Let's just talk about Christianity. and the people in the religious circles that were interviewed this past weekend over, you know, the federal court's decision to overturn the Marriage Act here in Virginia, that those in the religious community that are celebrating that. What's wrong with that picture? It's the same problem that the Israelites were experiencing in Hosea's day for the very same reasons. That's the point that we need to walk away with. Okay? Same thing. Gone on before. That's right. Oh, yeah, it's, yeah, all over the place. Yeah. Right. That's right. That's exactly right. And by the way, you know, one last statement here, and then we're going to finish up because we're way over time. You know, it talks about, we've been talking about the responsibility of the teachers, those who have been chosen to teach. If you are a parent, you have been chosen to teach. At least your children. It's your responsibility. Okay. We'll pick up here next week. Thank you all very much.